The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It's the start of another week here on the 9 till noon show. It is just approaching 4 minutes past nine on this Monday, the 11th of December, 2023, 2 weeks today. The big man arrives, if you've all been very good. So that means we don't have much long left of the year, does it? Okay, we have plenty coming up on this show today. Some really interesting, important items we have to discuss. And we want you involved by listening, of course, in the first instance. But getting involved with your texts, your calls, your comments, WhatsApps and texts to 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 07491 25000, and emails coming to us at comments@highlandradio.com. So if there's anything you want to talk about, anything that you came across at the weekend, let us know and we'll share it with the Northwest and, of course, beyond online. Okay, the front of the papers and inside some of them today, the Derry People Donegal News. 1 year on from Private Sean Rooney's death, family, friends and comrades lined his graveside for a wreath-laying ceremony at the Church of All Saints, Newtown, Cunningham, yesterday. Private Rooney was killed in Lebanon in December last year. The 34-year-old from Newtown, Cunningham, was killed as he drove an armoured jeep away from a crowd of attackers in the south of the country. At the ceremony, members of the Irish United Nations Veterans Association formed as the chair, Jim O'Hagan, welcomed Sean's family to the commemoration. The Derry News this morning: I tend to just avoid the town. That's the quote from a wheelchair user. A Derry man who uses a wheelchair said he's forced to avoid the city due to the lack of access for disabled people. Tommy Cairns has been a wheelchair user his whole life. He has cerebral palsy, which affects his mobility. He also works with a major disability group in the city. Tommy says he has real difficulty walking, especially any kind of distance. He gets fatigued easily, saying it takes somebody with cerebral palsy five times more energy than somebody without to complete a task. And he's complaining that there is not enough accessibility for a wheelchair user. The Irish Times this morning, and there was a lot of speculation about cutting benefits for newly arrived Ukrainians, and it seems the Cabinet is going to agree on that this week. Ministers are set to approve large reductions in benefits for refugees coming from Ukraine in future as accommodation pressures for other nationalities claiming asylum here worsens. The Cabinet Committee on Ukraine is scheduled to meet today, where the proposal from Minister for Integration, Roderick O'Gorman, including cutting welfare benefits for future Ukrainian arrivals and providing accommodation for only 90 days, are expected to be discussed by ministers before going to the full Cabinet tomorrow. But campaigners for refugees warned against the move last night, with the Irish Refugee Council saying it was putting short-term deterrence over long-term planning, adding that people would find it difficult, if not impossible, to find accommodation once the 90 days had run out. And I suppose now it's to be very clear, this is for new arrivals, so it doesn't mean that if someone currently is in accommodation here from Ukraine that they will have their payments cut. They'll retain their payments, and it doesn't mean that they have 90 days, as far as I'm aware, to get out of their accommodation. This is for new arrivals, and the government have been pretty frank about it. They've said that we have a situation whereby you have refugees arriving in some parts of Europe and then going, right, well, things are different in Ireland, we'll go there. So secondary sort of arrivals. Well, sources in all three government parties said yesterday that they expected the plans to be agreed this week, though it was stressed that they would not apply to the 100,000 existing Ukrainian refugees in Ireland, only to further arrivals. And it's costing in the region of 1.8 million, 1.9 million a day to host and look after Ukrainian refugees. So they want to limit that as much as possible, seemingly. On to the Irish Independent now. And children's anxiety about tests increases as they progress through primary school, according to a major new study. The sixth report in the Children's School Live series, a groundbreaking study into the lived experiences of school children, has found that by fourth class, children had started to report higher levels of test anxiety. A third of children interviewed between second class in 2019 and sixth class in 2023 said they typically felt anxious before and after standardized tests over their performance. Anxiety was often connected to a sense of failure or element of surprise. But I mean, obviously, when you're at school or in anywhere in life, you know, if you're studying or if you're working, there are points where you get judged on what you're doing. And you're going to feel an emotion, and that emotion obviously is going to be anxious. You're going to be anxious as to whether you do well. You're going to be anxious as if you don't do well. I think that, does that not help form who we are? I'm not sure if they're sort of suggesting that we need to limit this. But the latest report in the immersive and longitudinal research project focused on the experiences of primary school children had with curriculum and assessments from 2019 to 2023. The study, which covered nearly 200 schools in Ireland, also heard the views of teachers, parents, grandparents and principals. I look forward to reading that in a little bit more detail, because I don't think we can insulate ourselves, be it as adults or children, completely from stress and anxiety. It's how we manage it, I think, is quite critical. The Irish Daily Mail has quite an important warning, and it's a tough one to hear, and it kind of is tough, I think, for anyone who's got a new baby, particularly in that, you know, you want to, especially at this time of year, RSV's on the spread, you want to limit the possibility of them catching it. But of course, if you do have a new baby, and congratulations out there if you do, it's kind of a difficult one, isn't it? Because people call around and, you know, maybe they want to give the baby a kiss, or they want to hold the baby and, you know, Gucci Gucci goo into its face. And it can be quite awkward for people because they find it difficult to sort of say, can, you know, if you don't mind, how do you have that conversation? Is that something that you've come across, something you've experienced, a difficulty for you, or maybe you've a good way of sort of saying to people that you want the baby to have a bit of space? Or maybe you think some people will say, you know, babies need to get germs, but on newborn babies, you have to be really careful. But any experience or insight into this, 086 60 25,000. But doctors then have warned grandparents not to visit newborns this Christmas, as the spread of the RSV has resulted in up to 100 babies being admitted to intensive care in the past week, 6 weeks. Now, I'm going to read on and dig in about this, but I really find it hard to believe that doctors are warning grandparents not to visit newborns this Christmas. But anyway, that's what the article says. The potential fatal lung disease can have serious consequences for people aged 65 and over. Dr. Martina Healy, an intensive care consultant at Crumlin Children's Hospital, said if babies are less than 4 months old, grandparents are better off parking it for a few weeks and waiting to see their grandchildren. The calls were echoed by the Irish Medical Council, which advised that relatives should avoid kissing or cuddling babies under 6 months. I don't see any problem with that, but not visiting them at all. The warning comes as doctors are struggling to find enough intensive care beds. Dr. Healy also warned parents, if you have a small baby, don't have visitors in your house. The elderly can also get RSV. It's not just kids. People over 65 and 70 also get RSV and can be really sick with it. But if you have a small baby, we should be saying to parents, you should be limiting the amount of visitors and practicing common sense. The pneumonia-type disease can prove fatal in the worst cases among very young children. And RSV is the most common case of bronchitis in children aged under 2. Typically, case numbers peak in January. I think, again, often, though, what we talk about is parents trusting their guts and grandparents too. But what do you think about that? 086 60 25,000. The Irish Daily Star tells us today that the mother of the 5-year-old girl stabbed in Dublin says she's still fighting, as the chief suspect is set to be arrested within days. The girl was left critically injured by a man with a knife in an attack that also saw two other children and a creche worker stabbed on November 23 outside Gaelscoil Caolaistheomara on Parnell Square East in Dublin's city centre. And now, in a fresh update to a GoFundMe fundraiser, the girl's mother revealed she hopes she will be moved out of ICU and onto a ward by the end of the year, which is good news, isn't it? Our little girl is a warrior, she says. She is still fighting. She remains in the PICU with hopes of moving to the ward before the end of the year. Because you might remember that some people, often grifting, trying to make out that poor wee child was deceased and was part of some sort of a government cover-up, but according to her own mother, hopefully she will be out of intensive care before the end of the year. amazing and shocking scenes from County Leitrim over the weekend as a tornado tore through Leitrim as Storm Fergus barreled in yesterday. Roofs were blown off houses and 20 to 30 cars as well as boats in the marina were damaged as the freak weather event hit Leitrim village around lunchtime yesterday. Terrifying video captured debris flying through the air as the area was engulfed in a strong wind. Trees near the canal can be seen being whipped back and forth in the gusts, and a video of the aftermath shows wood from trees and outdoor furniture that had smashed into a car windscreen. Another car's rear window was smashed and covered in thick layers of mud that had been whipped up by the tornado, a mini tornado, but thankfully no one was injured. But it's horrendous scenes there, and if we're talking about that later on, I might try and get some of that footage so those watching the show can see the extent of it. And lastly, the Irish Daily Mirror. Support for the abolition of 1 and 2 cent coins is growing in Ireland, apparently. 7 out of 10 of you now in favour of doing away with the smaller value euro currency. A survey for the European Commission said 2/3 of citizens in the area support withdrawing the coins and applying mandatory rounding of pricing. I thought we already had mandatory rounding up and down. The results show 70% of Irish people are in favour of getting rid of the euros to smaller denominations, up 5 percentage points since a similar survey in 2022. The bottom line is though, I don't really see them to have any feelings about it one way or another. Anyway, that was a run through some of the front page and inside stories in the newspapers. We'll be back with more on the 9 till noon show after this quick break. Stay right where you are. And we are joined in studio by Harry. Harry, how are you getting on?
I'm not too bad, Greg. Thanks.
Thank you so much for joining us, Harry. And we were speaking on this programme last week and the week before to some extent about the scourge of drugs effectively and the pressure it places on families as well, because it was mentioned at a recent meeting that, you know, younger people or other members of the family, regardless of their age, are finding themselves deep in drugs debt. The threats start and next thing you know, they're having to go to the credit union to borrow money. Some people having to remortgage houses. I mean, you are a former drug addict. So, I mean, you would have thought, yeah, I can see how that can happen. Is that sort of how you were feeling listening to it? Or
definitely, Greg, yeah. I could relate to what was being said, you know, as a former drug addict. It's the family that my family suffered more with me, more so my mother, my father, because of the trauma you bring to the family and the crisis with stealing. I was an intravenous heroin addict, started taking drugs at 15, and
Start there and we'll move through. So, yeah. Like, at the age of 15, how did you come across drugs?
I would have been a runner and I was I knocked about on the estate with a gang in London. And cannabis came along and I said, I must try that. I was very easily led and that was the gateway drug to my becoming addicted to drugs. And I liked the effect of it. And then...
Were you escaping something at that time?
Oh, God, yeah. I would have been traumatised very badly as a child. I don't want to go into it here.
No, that's okay.
I've had professional help for it, but definitely, yeah. Basically, what I was doing was suppressing the pain and the hurt and the anger and all the feelings that were hurtful, and when I started to take drugs, it did work for a certain period of time. It numbed it all. But then there's a song by The Verve, the older people remember, oh, the drugs don't work, but eventually they stopped working. But a lot of people suffered as a consequence of my drug addiction, predominantly my mother, because she would have backed me up, you know. But things went missing, you know. When you need money for Class A drugs, I'm only speaking about myself, things would go missing and I'd be dishonest. And totally against the way I was reared. I come out of good people, like. But once I got into the heroin, that was goodnight Vienna.
And I've spoken to parents before that, you know, that the child that they know disappears almost and replaced by someone else, it seems, in the space of a month or two once they get into an addiction. That's something you can recognise as well, I presume, and it's clear... You know, you're very conscious of the impact of all of this on your mother. You think that's what she experienced, that her Harry went to be replaced by another Harry, so to speak?
Definitely. As time went on, I was changing and couldn't be trusted. She wouldn't believe a word I said, like, you know, because it was all lies and And just for the need, I would tell lies. I need money for this, I need money for that. And then I'll get in trouble with the police. I started getting bothered with the police. And things my mother's never been near a police station or had the police to the house. Then the police would start calling, looking for me. And, you know, the things my mother had to put up with were, you know, caused me a great deal of hurt and shame myself. But I kept driving on because the need for drugs was that great that it didn't matter. I just took and took and took. Yeah. And whoever I could take it off, I would take it off, you know?
Yeah, but at the in the beginning, Harry, as a young 14, 15-year-old, I mean, you were a victim because they would have seen, you know, that you could be exploited, that, you know what I mean, that you would, if they started peddling you drugs, that you would become a regular customer, and who's to say however else they could exploit you. I mean, 14 or 15 years of age, and they would have seen in you,
yeah,
presumably, which is sad.
Well, that would have been with the cannabis smoking, but I remember when I was 15, I saw this guy, and he was a second-hand car dealer, about 27, and he was injecting a drug called Dicanor. I don't think it's on the market anymore. And I looked at the state he was in, and this is how insane it is. I looked at him, I said, geez, I'd like to be that out of my head. And I said, go on, give us a go of that. And he was injecting it. He says, no, I couldn't give you a whole one. I said, well, give me a half of one. And he gave me a half of one, but I was on cloud nine. But I didn't have any worries for that. That was, you're always chasing that initial buzz. No effect of drug ever was like that one.
Yeah.
But you chase it. I chased it. I chased it. I chased it.
And just before we move on, you know, as you say, you started with cannabis. So very quickly, obviously, you were exposed to really strong drugs and opiates and what have you. Would and it's a personal opinion, and it's not to whip up any sort of debate or controversy, though we're open to that. Like, do you think the likes of cannabis is a gateway drug, generally speaking, or do you think because of sort of the masking that you were doing, that it was always going to be a gateway drug for you?
I believe it. For me, it was a gateway drug, but there's people that can take a few puffs and leave it.
Same as booze. Then,
same really, as booze, yeah. There's social drug takers, but for me, I was addict man from day one. But the thing about this is the only disease, I believe it is a disease, it's the only disease that tells you you don't have it. I know now about the disease concept of addiction because I studied it and I've worked in this field for over 20 years. But I didn't know. I didn't know back then. You know, I just weren't sure of. I just was taking it to keep me away from the hurt and the pain.
So fast forward to 18. Then at this point, you know, you're heading into a 4-year heroin addiction.
Yeah.
An expensive drug, is it?
I was spending back then. That was 1980. It was costing me 70 sterling a day. Yeah.
My. How are you funding it?
I'm mainly stealing and, yeah, basically theft, robberies and all kinds of stuff.
And in your head at that time, are you out of it or do you justify? Because you say it's against how you were raised by your mum, right? So do you even think about, you know, well, I'm going to commit this crime, the impact on someone else, but I have to do it because I have to feed this drug addiction, or is it all just a blur, or what's going through one's mind when they feel that they have to steal to feed this drug addiction?
Well, it's the fear of withdrawals. When I was coming down off it, you know, the withdrawals are terrible from it, you know. It's like the flu times 20.
Yeah.
So once I started to get ill, that's when the consequences happened, because the sicker I got, the more I needed the money and the more things I would do to get the money. So really, it's basically the sickness that drove me on, because, I mean, I had that period of drug use, and then when I come to Ireland in the 90s, I was using heroin again for about a year, not even a year. But I was going to Ballymena, a rough area. They were politically motivated, different religion to me. But I used to go into the house and I would sit in that house maybe for 2 hours. The lights were out, there were bars up on the door, there were bulletproof windows. But I was that desperate because I was sick. So I sat and nothing really mattered, to be honest with you, Greg. I sat for 2 hours because I needed to get me hit, like, if you know what I mean, yeah?
And so then how do you, because it's like one addiction follows another for you. It's been a tough old going for you. Harry, but like, so at age 22, did you move away? How did you break the first sort of grip heroin had on you?
I moved from London to Ireland, you see. But there were no drugs back then. There weren't so many drugs years ago. I'm going back a long time. But drink became my next drug, you know, alcohol. So I became alcoholic, you know.
Yeah,
so
okay.
It was drink. I moved the goalpost from drug taking to drinking alcohol.
So it was you replacing one with the other?
Definitely,
really,
yeah,
some extent.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm dual addicted.
And how long did how long? I mean, you're always addicted to alcohol, of course, but you know, that's you're sort of in your 20s now.
Mm-hmm.
You're in the north at this point.
I'm in the north. I'm in my 20s. The troubles were going on too, so you had to be careful.
Yeah.
But you see, when you're on that, excuse me, when you're on that drug, you don't care. I didn't care if I got shot because I didn't value life that much, really.
It amazing sometimes that you're still here?
Ah, got it. Most of the boys I know from London or here, even in Ireland, in Derry, most of them died from ODing and that. So I do believe that I'm here for a reason. I've no doubt about that, because I should be gone long ago. Some of the handlings I got into, I couldn't talk about them on radio, but, you know, I've no doubt about it. So I'm not a religious person, but I do believe somebody, my mother prayed for me and my aunts prayed for me all the time, and I believe in the power of prayer, and I believe that that's what was happening. That's what kept me alive. I believe that.
So you had the heroin addiction, then you switched to alcohol, then there was a relapse of sorts then with the heroin then.
Yeah, because I stopped drinking in 97 and I haven't had a drink a day at a time since 97. And I took drugs in for about a year and I stopped me drugging on the 19th of December 1999. And I remember the millennium because I spent it in Grantcher Hospital in Derry. I was drying out from cold turkey. They didn't give you nothing back then. So it was cold turkey. And I remember the millennium like it was yesterday. I never forget it, you know. It was a hard time. But I knew then that the party was over. I've had enough. I was done. See, the thing about drugs and alcohol for me is I don't stop them, they stop me. That was my experience, and I'd had enough of it. I really had enough of it.
So what was the actual tipping point to say, right, I've had enough of heroin, I've had enough of booze, you know?
I just knew there was a better life. See, I had been to AA meetings and I'd heard that in the rooms, you know, that there's a better way, there is a solution, you know, so I knew really deep down, I knew that this is a terrible way of living and I would be dead anyway if I'd have kept on, basically.
Yeah. So you got sober in 2001, but in advance of that...
2000.
I beg your pardon, 2000. You did spend a year in a psychiatric unit. What was that experience like?
No, I didn't spend a year. No, I was in the psychiatric times.
In and out of it,
yeah,
sorry.
Drying out, having detoxes. Yeah, that's what... Because I would be afraid to stop and I'd always end up going to the doctor maybe and he'd refer me to the psychiatrist. It's different now. You don't get into the psychiatric unit as handy as you used to.
Do you have a different sort of understanding, Harry, of... particularly young people. Let's talk about young people because I think that's when you're most impressionable. You know, like, say, you know, 15 to 25, you might be familiar with their names because they're involved in a scene, you know, when they appear in newspapers because they're in the courts or what have you and all. Do you have a different view, do you think, to the general population of them? You'll see comments on social media, scumbags, lock them up, blah, blah, blah. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong. That's what people are feeling, right? But do you think that then is a situation whereby we as a society don't necessarily understand that it is a disease, that once you're addicted to drugs, you're around criminality, you're around criminals. You know, we've heard of people having to leave the country because the dealers try and drag them back into addiction. Like, do you think we need to look at this in a different way than what we are now?
Well, I do, because people would have called me a junkie, a scumbag, and I see things differently. I felt that way anyway, so I didn't need people to call me it. But I see things differently now that, you know, anyone that's getting involved with thieving and addiction, there's a genuine reason why they're doing it. I never woke up one morning and said, I must stick some heroin into me or whatever. There was reasons behind it, but I know society's going to have their views on it, and a lot of people don't understand the causes and conditions of this disease. But I remember a woman, Lord have mercy on her name, Margaret McGonigal. She's passed away. She was a counsellor, and she taught me so much. She was a trauma counsellor. She's a Donegal woman. She taught me so much. I'll be forever grateful to that lady. And by her teaching me, I was in the same field of the helping industry, and I would have been able to put people on to her that got help, got recovery. Some of my friends in recovery now, you wouldn't believe what they're up to, all good positive stuff. I believe it's in the giving you receive. You know, I'm not the person I used to be. You know, I paid a heavy price, and so did a lot of other people. I'm not feeling sorry for Harry. I hurt a lot of people. I wounded a lot of people, and I would be sorry for that. And in my recovery, there's a program where you go, in our program, you go back and make amends to ones mm-hmm. you've harmed, mm-hmm. if it's safe for you and for them. So I'm lucky that I found the 12-step program of recovery. And for me, that program is a program of change, and I'm not the person I was.
And I mean, you have since 2000, you know, find your path as well. I mean, obviously, you have to look after yourself and make sure that you don't relapse and what have you. But you also moved to Donegal. Your mother originally from Donegal, and you talk of people that have influenced your life from here as well. And you talked to, or we spoke beforehand, about your time in White Oaks becoming a counsellor.
Yeah,
that was around 2005.
That's right. Yeah,
that I presume that helps you. But then again, through that, you can help other people. Like, I don't know what the balance is or the scale there, but you get something from it. And then obviously the people you work with get something from it as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'd be grateful to help people, you know, because a lot of people are suffering out there. And I was fortunate enough that I have a vast knowledge about drugs and the effects and the usage of drugs, mainly due to me being a user of drugs. But also, I studied a hell of a lot. I'm always studying about addiction, the diseases, the causes, you know, so I have a better understanding of it. I would nearly say I'm very well versed on addiction now, because I've been at it 20-odd years studying and learning. And I remember when I was at school, I was in the bottom class all the way through to junior school. And I used to get away with a lot because I was a very good footballer and I was a runner. I nearly ran at international level. So the teachers used to teach running and what have you. But I was looking out the window most of the time because I was full of stress and anxiety from stuff. And I always heard this before. If there was a blackboard at the window, I'd have been top of the class because I never spent all my time looking out the window.
When you sort of, like, going back to your period of heroin addiction, and you mentioned some other drugs as well, it's very different now, though, in terms of what drugs are there, their availability, how you can get your hands on them, how organised it is, the business of selling drugs, the way it's networked, the way it's moved around the country, the way it's available in every corner of every corner of corner, right? Yeah, yeah. It's how do you compare the sort of drug scene from your late teens and 20s to the drug scene now? It's different types of people, all different types of people taking drugs now.
Yeah, back in the day it was a certain type of person, more so. But nowadays it's more sociably acceptable now too, you know. The people who accept cocaine taking's become fairly normal. But I mean, I have two dogs and I walk where I live, I walk me dogs. And without and I'm in a rural area, every day I see empty 50 bags of coke, like every day nearly, yeah. And that's so, it's people accepting it much more. But the quality, see, when drugs, I find when I was taking them, when they reach this far, the standard and the quality would go down because the drugs get cut as they move along, kind of way. But I think society definitely has a different view on cocaine use. But heroin,
it's a bit more casual, isn't it? Cocaine, it seems to be like, sure, it's only, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's party drug, it's social, and people take it to socialise. See, when I was taking heroin, I didn't socialise, I went into myself, turned in on me.
But I don't think we can really ever talk seriously about drugs, cannabis and cocaine and its addiction and its gatewayness and all that kind of stuff, unless you also throw drink into it. But we never want to in this country talk about alcohol, right? Yeah, so if you're an addictive personality and you're chasing that buzz, right, it could be alcohol as much as it could be cannabis, which could lead you on to cocaine or heroin. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yes, like, I do, yeah.
But we have this sort of an a la carte attitude that booze is great. Let's open the pubs to 5 a.m. Everything's fine, right? But don't go near these other drugs because you could end up involved in criminality. It's a strange sort of two-track society we live in, isn't it?
Yeah, and
you don't say anything bad about booze, but the other drugs are terrible.
See, booze is legal and it's sociably acceptable, but Sometimes I wonder what it would be like if they legalized drugs. In some ways, at times I would be wonder what it would be like if they legalize it. Well, it cuts out the criminality, but then I don't know. I'm not sure. I kind of keep an open mind on that, you know.
I think a lot of people do. Right, so anything you want to part with, Harry, just in terms of, I don't know, as I say, this kind of was triggered by the conversation of a lot of people taking drugs and the impact on the individuals and their families. I mean, you've lived that, you've experienced it, you know all about that. But I think you are of the view, if I'm correct, in that, you know, just locking people up in this, you know, turnstile at the prison gates is not working.
No, it's not the answer. I mean, I worked in a prison for a few years as a counsellor, and ticking exercises, you know. And it's more, when I was there, I didn't get working with the individual offender. I was doing predominantly writing. Tell me how Johnny's not going to reoffend. How do I know how Johnny's not going to reoffend? Yeah. I didn't get working with the person. It wasn't person-centred. But, but don't get me wrong, prisons are making an effort. They are trying to work with people that are addicted. They definitely are, but it just needs a lot of in my opinion, needs overhauled a lot.
All right. How are you now?
I'm great, yeah. Well, I'm not great. I lost my mother. Obviously, I'm not great. My mum died on the 2nd of November.
Which is very recent.
She's my best friend, you know.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, you're making her very proud, I would say, in speaking out. And we understand that's really difficult for you. Yeah. But thank you so much, Harry, for telling us your story, and hopefully people out there can get something from it. And again, condolences on the very sad loss of your mother, who clearly was very important to you.
Yeah,
but for now, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Greg. Okay. Thank you.
Now, as you would know, Highland Radio's big car draw is ongoing. So you're invited, if you wish, if you can afford to buy a ticket, €10 for one, €50 for six, €80 for 10. You're going to the draw drum and someone is going to win a fantastic car. It's worth over €30,000 and it is a beaut. But what are we going to do as well over the next 10 working days, I suppose you could call it, Monday to Friday, this week, Monday to Friday, next week, we are doing our Grand A Day giveaway. It's happening from today, the 11th, to the 22nd. And here's the deal. If you've entered our card draw, you could be the lucky winner of €1,000. Every day we'll be making a call to one lucky listener. So picture this. You answer the phone and discover you're a €1,000 witcher. But there is a twist. If the call goes unanswered, the prize doesn't disappear. It rolls over to the next day and the next day and the next day. But listen, hopefully we'll get through to people. So I have been told that I will be giving away €1,000 at some point between now and 12. So if you have your ticket, be ready for a call, because hopefully one of you will win €1,000. Anyone who has a ticket right now is in 11 draws, effectively. So hopefully I'll get through to that lucky winner. It's not too late for you to get your ticket, by the way, and to be included in this element of the prize as well. If you get your ticket in the next, let's say, the next three quarters of an hour, let me put it to you like that there, you're in effectively all 11 draws, if you know what I'm saying. So it's €10,000 in total up for grabs over the next 10 working days, and then the car as well. So if you're going to get a ticket, you get it now, and that means that you're in all the draws, and you could get that call from me this morning. If you want to go onto our website, highlandradio.com, it's very safe and simple. You can enter there, or you can call us here at the station now, 07491 25000, and we, as best we can, will process those ticket purchases for you. And you'll be in. You could actually buy a ticket now and get a call from me in less than an hour or an hour or so and win €1,000 cash money, €1,000 cash for Christmas. Okay, isn't that exciting? And also, as happens at this time of year, we have a lovely promotion in association with the McGee's Chemists. So this week on the 9 till noon show, we've got a hamper worth over €500 to be won, courtesy of McGee's Chemists in Letterkenny. And McGee's.ie. It contains a Clarence Christmas hamper, a blank canvas 12-piece gold makeup brush set, a large blank canvas purple 3-piece gift set, a Be Perfect muted palette, a Jimmy Choo ladies fragrance, and a 20 by 16 gallery wrapped canvas, so you can have your favourite photo wrapped in canvas and ready to hang on the wall. Five daily qualifiers will be in the draw on Friday, and each qualifier will also win a prize. Today's prize is for the ladies. It's a 50 milliliter Carolina Herrera Good Girl EDP spray. So, Caroline, do I play this out now and then we invite people to enter the McGee's? No, we'll not do it. I'll talk to you about that. Stay with me. We're going to take a quick break and I will... Ah, fantastic. So they've come on air. Right. So simply send your name and where you're from to 086 60 25,000. Text or WhatsApp 086 60 25,000, and we'll select one of you who hopefully will win today's prize from McGee's Chemist 50 milliliter Carolina Herrera Good Girl EDP spray. So that's not so bad. So we've got that to go, and then we have €1,000 to give away before the end of this program as well. Get your tickets for the car draw if you want to be in that draw today as well, please. Right, we're joined on the program now by the owner of the Leitrim Inn and Blue Way Lodge, Adeline. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Good morning.
How are you all keeping? Tell us about how this mini tornado visited the village.
Well, it was fast and furious. For something that lasted under 30 seconds, it did an awful lot of damage. Customers that were in the Leitrim Inn and Blue Way Lodge just didn't know what was happening. Literally, the building shook and dust and smoke and debris started filling in through the doors. People just didn't know what was going on. And when they came outside, obviously, it was worse. It was an absolute unreal event.
And what did you think was happening, I wonder?
Well, we knew it was weather-related, you know. Some of the younger staff thought it was an explosion, you know, they didn't know. But everybody was just shocked. We didn't know exactly what it was, but we did come to the conclusion fairly quickly it was some type of a tornado.
And it's very localised, isn't it? So whatever was in its pathway took a real hit.
It took a definite pathway, yeah. And just everything in its pathway, just it was very, very powerful. I mean, there's block walls knocked down, roofs taken off, windows blown out, there was people in cars that it's an absolute miracle that they weren't killed. One car at the front had a beam gone through its windscreen and there were two people in that. Another car at the back in the car park, there was an older lady in it and her car at the back was completely flattened. So she escaped too. Very, very, very lucky.
It's an incredible shock for everyone. Everyone is okay. As you say, a miracle no one was injured. The cleanup starts now. Of course, some people are out of their homes. Businesses unable to operate. I'm sure Leitrim County Council are on the ground assessing things and hope to get things as back to normal as soon as possible.
Leitrim County Council, we have engineers, we have assessors, the Gardaí. So just basically assessing it and see where we're at. There's an awful lot of businesses that's going to be affected now, and homes, there's people, a lot of homes destroyed as well. So yeah, it's you just won't know till later today exactly how bad it is.
Yeah, it's an awful shock for everyone, and the strength, the destructive power, that's what's really, you know, we see this stuff on the TV and what have you. To actually see it in action locally, it is incredible. The level of destruction is astonishing, isn't it?
It's crazy. And it's just sad. And it's, you know, the time of year that's in it, you know, people can't afford to have their businesses closed. This is, you know, should be one of the busiest times of the year. You know, we've staff now that are wondering when they're going to be back at work. And we can't give them any answers.
Would you be hoping, or maybe it's already been committed, that the government will put in some sort of a support similar as we see during the times of flooding?
Yes, I would really hope that we would get some help. This, as I said, this is a very, very unreal event. And I would expect the government to help us out, get our businesses back up and running. as quickly as possible and get people back to work and back into their homes for Christmas.
Yeah.
Now, there is whispers that Leo Varadkar is on his way to the village at the moment. So hopefully that's a good indication that they're prepared, he's
coming with something, hopefully, yeah. Because for a lot of businesses as well, this is the sort of couple of weeks trading that gets you through the quiet January,
the quiet
February as well.
Yeah, like, okay. Exactly.
All right, listen, thank you so much for joining us at this difficult time. We hope everything gets back to normal as soon as is possible. Thanks for giving us an insight. I really appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
All right, take care, Adeline. Bye-bye. She's owner of the Leitrim Inn and Blue Way Lodge there. In studio with me now is Joe Corkery, spokesperson for the Special Needs Parent Donegal Network Group. And we're really lucky to have you come in and give us updates on the various meetings and the progress that's being made in this campaign. So you had another meeting with the HSC on Friday.
We did. Thanks okay. for having us on.
No, sorry. I'm so familiar with you now. I've done away with all courtesy and politeness. You're just part of the family now, Joe. I'm conscious we have about 5 minutes, so I want to get it out as much as possible. Right, okay. So your initial, just as an update on your feelings as to how serious the HSE are taking all of this now, because yous have put in, and you know the collective term for it, all the families come together, yous have put a lot of effort in to sort of say, right, this is the pathway, these are the problems, what are you going to do now? So it's over to you. You feel they're working with you? Progress being made?
There's huge work happening, I suppose, in terms of recruitment. So there really is, you know, a fantastic effort from HSE management, the HR team at, you know, CHO One Health team. So yeah, on recruitment, there's a huge amount of work happening for sure. Minister Abbott was in with you 3 weeks ago and she spoke about, you know, removing the panel system for Donegal. That will also be happening in Galway and Waterford. And I would imagine it will also be extended out nationwide because, as we've mentioned a number of times, this is a nationwide issue. So as it currently stands, there are 50 vacant roles in Donegal for children's disability. It was communicated to us that 12 of those are at, you know, a latter stage of the recruitment process, and that best case scenario still leaves us with 38 open roles. It was discussed, and they were very transparent and open with us on Friday, that the expressions of interest are unfortunately very low in the remaining roles. So that does leave us very concerned about the future, particularly the short to medium term.
And just to be clear, there is a recruitment freeze. This doesn't cover this area at the moment. So that's not a factor in the recruitment process as it stands.
That should actually help us in terms of, you know, the disability teams have a derogation. So we can still continue to hire for children's disability roles, which is very much a positive. But expressions of interest are quite low, which does concern us about the short term.
And is that with the knowledge of the panels being scrapped or all right, so in other words, that hasn't been the silver bullet.
It just
and in
will
fairness,
take time.
The minister suggested as such. Yeah. Relocation packages. Yes. Is that a thing? Because that
is something
kind
that they have
something we haven't seen
Dermot
much
Mahan,
before.
Yeah, Dermot Mahan, the head of the HSE team, and CHO One spoke to us that they are offering relocation packages. You know, there is a huge amount of work happening to try and encourage applications to the Donegal role. So that's, you know, very, very encouraging. Although I suppose in terms of short to medium term, what will happen for our kids right now or what's going to happen in the next 6 months, we're still quite concerned about that, to be fair.
Yeah, and in terms of the short term measures, because we kind of been discussing short, medium, long, right?
Yeah.
So the minister again talked about, you know, using up private capacity and things like that there.
Exactly.
Any progress in that regard?
So let me just go through our four measures. So the first measure was on equipment needs and supporting the families and the children who have urgent equipment needs. That is happening. Very, very reassuring to see that, you know, therapists are reaching out to families, you know, on their wheelchair needs, on, you know, orthotic needs and things like that. So there is provision and maintenance of equipment happening for those urgent cases, which is very, very reassuring. And that was something we were very, very keen to ensure happened as soon as possible. In terms of redeployment of resources from other areas was emergency measure number two. Very non-committal on that. And I suppose what we're saying is, look, that's what the actual existing staff are telling us needs to happen, you know, because we need experience. I mean, Donegal East, as a location, has 70% vacancy rate. You know, the best case scenario is we're going to be recruiting in 8 new therapists into that team. And, you know, they need experience, they need support, they need training and all that type of thing. So we still see that as a work in progress, and maybe we still have to make a convincing case with regards to that. Reimbursement for private therapy was something we were very firm on, because families are paying a huge amount of money. Those that can afford to are paying a huge amount of money, and obviously those that can't afford to are having to go without. So the children have lesser outcomes, which is an unacceptable situation in our, from our perspective. Mr. Abbott referenced a scheme to us, but provided no details whatsoever on that. So we want to follow up with her
the
on that.
The actions have to follow the words,
yeah,
don't they?
Exactly, okay, exactly. Now, just to reference your point, yes, there is some really efforts ongoing to contract in private services into the HSE. And that is happening on a very small scale at the minute. We do feel there's a huge opportunity to expand that. I will be frank, it will be probably teletherapy that we're speaking about, because, you know, private services, private therapies are hard to hard to access, as well as public services. So, you know, but there are organisations around the country who have, you know, expressed an interest in helping support, you know, children on the CD&T caseload in Donegal. So we are really pushing that with the team, with the HSE team here in Donegal. So we do feel there's huge scope to extend that. It won't be ideal. It won't be what, you know, what we really need to see, but it will be something in the short to medium term to support those families.
Do you know what kind of interest in all of this is, Joe? Is if you hadn't got together as you've had, where we'd be at, none of this would be happening. Like, the panels would still be there, the... Do you know, it just goes to show that
it's, yeah,
isn't it scary?
How bad would it have got before
some of this stuff?
And there's a group of parent representatives that are working really hard on this as well, alongside the HSE. And you know, it's about people. And I will say this: like, we're all doing this on a voluntary basis. You know, we have families, we have work commitments, and we are, you know, but we see the power, you know, I suppose, behind our voices, and we see the value of these roles, the value of the therapy. There's everyone that works within the CD&T teams in Donegal that we've come in contact with are fantastic.
Yeah.
They're highly skilled. They're fantastic. They're brilliant at their jobs. We need more of those, you know, and that's what we're saying loud and clear. We need more of those. But I suppose as part of our, just to, before I finish up, I wanted to mention just about Special Needs Parents Network Donegal. So we have almost 700 members on our Facebook page. I want to say that that's a closed Facebook page. Mm-hmm. That's just for, and we are going to be working a little bit more on our social media to get, because it's an election next year, we need to get it out there. We also are working on and have recently launched a website. So special needs, or it's www.snpndonegal.com. So that's going to have information about our organisation, about local initiatives, about signposting parents towards, you know, fantastic work that's happening, about where they can get support.
Brilliant, because we can only do the headlines here.
Yeah.
But all the info's on the Facebook page and will be on the website. All right, keep us in the loop.
We will.
Joe, thank you very much for calling in. That's Joe Corkery, spokesperson for Special Needs Parents Donegal Network Group. We'll be back after the news and obituary notices.